This podcast of NPR's On Point with Tom Ashbrook is a production of WBUR Boston.
From WBUR Boston and NPR, I'm Anthony Brooks, in for Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. Almost 6 months after Katrina struck and the levees failed, New Orleans is in the midst of its annual Mardi Gras celebration, sort of. This year's party is scaled back with fewer parades, fewer tourists, and of course, a dark and somber backdrop. Just blocks from the parade routes and the Bourbon Street bars, much of the city remains empty, dark, and ruined. An eerie context for a celebration that some residents say never should have gone forward at all. But most say even a limited Mardi Gras shows that New Orleans' heart and soul didn't drown in the floodwaters, and that if it takes a party to show the world that a ravaged city is still in pain and determined to rebuild, then party on. Up next On Point, Mardi Gras amidst the ruins. Joining me now from New Orleans is Scott Gold, a reporter for the Los Angeles Times. He's been covering New Orleans and recently wrote several articles about the effect Mardi Gras is having on the city. And Scott Gold, thanks for joining us, and hello.
Thank you for having me.
It's great to hear you. In so many ways, Mardi Gras defines New Orleans. It really expresses the heart and soul of that city, the neighborhoods, the racial mix, the fun, the sense of culture. Give us a sense of how the celebration feels this year.
This year, it's a melancholy affair, I think it's fair to say, with a shorter parade schedule, shorter parade routes, fewer floats, fewer bands, and at times very small crowds. The crowds in the tourism market will almost certainly pick up this weekend during the lead-up to the culmination of Mardi Gras, which occurs on Fat Tuesday, as you said. And many locals, I think, felt like canceling Mardi Gras would have amounted to admitting defeat.
Mm-hmm.
But the consensus seems to be at this point that this event, while it is and remains a cherished tradition, will not mean the economic or the spiritual salvation that many had been hoping for.
Hmm. I guess the reporting that I've done on this over the months, they usually count on, what, $1 billion each Mardi Gras season coming in? What's the city likely to get this time around?
Well, that's right. Mardi Gras in recent years has drawn about 1 million people and generated about $1 billion in tourism revenue, making it far and away the centerpiece of the region's $5.5 billion annual tourism market. Generous estimates this year are that the carnival will be approximately a third the size that it has been in recent years, so it may generate approximately $300 to $400 million in tourism revenue, which is about the same amount of money that is generated by staging a typical Super Bowl. So that would be considerably fewer tourism dollars that would be pumped into the economy here, but it would be no trifling amount in New Orleans, which is broke and maintaining basic services only through emergency loans right now.
But does the cost of actually putting Mardi Gras on, the overtime for the police, the extra sanitation, will that be covered by the tourist dollars that it brings in? Or how does that calculus work out?
Well, city officials this season attempted for the first time to defray their costs by signing up corporate sponsors.
Mm-hmm.
This was seen among purists as a highly controversial decision, but city officials explained that they were really left with no choice. Despite that controversy, so far only one sponsor has come forward, and that is Glad Product, which donated an unspecified six-figure sum, as well as 100,000 trash bags.
Oh, I see. That was the only one. That was the only one.
That's the only corporate sponsor to have come forward so far. And so the council has since voted, because it had no choice, to spend $2.7 million on police overtime and other festival-related costs, but no one is sure where the money will come from.
Interesting. Now, some have expressed in the past, I was down there in November, and I think the debate was a little sort of more ongoing then about whether or not to hold Mardi Gras. But one concern that was expressed that I heard was that the staging of Mardi Gras could send a dangerous and misleading message to the nation that all is well in New Orleans. We're up and partying and we've recovered. From what you're saying, it doesn't sound like there's much of a chance of those fears being borne out.
Right. I think that that's true. There are certainly questions remaining about just how practical it is to be staging a big street party in New Orleans. And there are certainly questions of how sensitive it is to be doing that, considering that bodies are still being found occasionally in neighborhoods that are a half mile or less from the parade routes. But the notion that people are going to be looking at a much smaller and in many ways a more melancholy affair this year and concluding that New Orleans is somehow back on its feet and fully operational, I just don't think that that's likely this year.
Was it your sense, though, that it was really possible to even consider canceling Mardi Gras? And the reason I ask that is the sense that I got down there was that Mardi Gras is so much a part of, I mean, it would happen anyway. It would happen spontaneously, even if the city didn't officially sanction it. It's so much a part of the fabric of people's lives and traditions that parties would break out on street corners just the same. In other words, was it ever a realistic idea that it actually wouldn't happen? What's your take on that?
Well, I think that's right. Mardi Gras has been canceled 13 times, canceled or drastically reduced in times, 13 times in the past. Most times because of war, because of World War II, Korea. And the last time it was canceled, however, I think was pretty telling for these circumstances. It was canceled due to a police strike in 1979. And that year, you're absolutely right, people essentially refused to cede Mardi Gras to the powers that be because it is very much seen as a tradition of the people and by the people and very much a populist affair. And it is part of the cherished tradition is that there is no organizing party. There is no official Mardi Gras office. No one runs Mardi Gras, and people love that here. And so that year when it was canceled, people hauled their beads out of their attics, the beads that had been thrown to them in previous years, threw them in the back of their kids' red wagons, and just walked down the street, throwing them to friends and people walking down the sidewalk. And I think you're absolutely right. That would have happened this year had they decided to cancel Mardi Gras.
Scott Gold is a reporter with the Los Angeles Times, speaking with us from New Orleans. Scott Gold, thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
Appreciate it. Joining me now, also from New Orleans, is Nick Spitzer, and he's going to remain with us for the rest of the hour. Nick Spitzer is the host of the public radio music and cultural program American Roots, which has been broadcasting for almost a decade. The New York Times has called the program the voice of New Orleans. Nick Spitzer is also professor of folklore at the University of New Orleans and contributed to the new book Blues for New Orleans, Mardi Gras, and America's Creole Soul. And Nick Spitzer, what a pleasure to have you. Thanks for joining us.
Oh, dare I say happy Mardi Gras.
Happy Mardi Gras. Well, let me sort of put the same question to you. Talk about what Mardi Gras means to you this year, to the city of New Orleans this year of all years.
Well, I think you need to back up in time, and you also need to look at local culture and understand that Mardi Gras, it's really not a question of whether we can or can't have Mardi Gras, because it's going to happen, as your guest just said, regardless of what the city sanctions. And you know, in 1699, when Iberville was coming up the Mississippi, they paused on Mardi Gras Day, and where they anchored, they called a place on that lower river Mardi Gras Point, Pointe du Mardi Gras. So this is embedded in the French Latinate tradition. It's been commingled with the African, Caribbean, Creole traditions and all the different cultures that have come here over the years, including Anglo-Southerners and English-speaking African-Americans. And it really is the great citywide celebration that pulls people together as much as shows all the different strains and elements in the city. And I think that while, you know, people do back up and say, should we do this, there's sort of the kind of parallel to the being at a wake where somebody says, should we have a drink for the old guy? He says, oh, sure, he'd want us to do that. And I think that line of talk is what's out there. You know, people would want us to do this, including those who have lost folks and certainly the many people that lost homes and property. It's really embedded in what the city is and does, and I see it as a real stepping stone to the city's future ability to play host to the outside world and to celebrate itself in a manner that is deeply historical and cultural. Will it be more melancholy and have a little bit more of the sad theatrical face rather than the always allegro face? Sure, but that's what Carnival has always done. It's always adapted to circumstance.
Yeah. Nick, tell me a story about what you've seen so far to give me sort of a sense of how it feels this year.
Well, it's true. The crowds are thinner. There's fewer people here. There's an element of sort of a post-colonial frontier ghost town, you know, and there's talk of people that live in the sliver by the river, being the primary celebrants from the lower neighborhoods of Bywater and Marigny up through the Quarter and Garden District and Uptown. But
these are the parts of this,
out in the suburbs, and I know there's people coming in from Atlanta and Houston and Dallas, Baton Rouge. And what I've seen thus far, actually, the sort of preliminary parades, my favorite was Crew de Vue, the old one that calls itself old, but it's actually fairly new, last couple decades, goes through the French Quarter, uses the old wagons, but it made total fun of the president, the governor, the mayor, and it was filled with scatology, and it was just hysterically satirical in the way that Carnival is a kind of social comment at its most, you know, uproarious, and it had a very good crowd, and of course it was in a neighborhood that had a lot of people that were on higher ground. It struck me as a really cathartic moment and a really good crowd.
I'd like to introduce Clyde Robertson. He's the former director of the Department of Africana and Multicultural Studies for the New Orleans Public Schools. He's currently rebuilding his home. And Clyde Robertson, welcome.
Thank you, Anthony.
Thank you very much for joining us today.
I'm pleased to.
I'm glad to have you. Now, you've probably heard a couple of voices saying this is a good idea and it's a tradition that sort of can't be resisted in New Orleans. I'd like to hear your point of view. I gather you have a slightly different point of view about what's going on in the city today.
Well, first I'd like to state that my family and I enjoy Carnival and Mardi Gras as much as anyone in the city.
Mm-hmm.
However, at this moment, it's more than just a distraction. It dishonors the memory of those people who were killed during the storm. Mm. It dishonors the memories of those people who are dying post the storm. A lot of information is not being generated concerning the numbers of people who are dying of strokes and heart attacks as a result of the stress and strain that this storm and its aftermath have put on them or has put on them.
Mm. Mr. Robertson, I'd like to ask you personally, because I've talked to you a little bit about this in the past, tell me how your family fared through Hurricane Katrina and the ensuing floods.
Well, my parents lost everything. My aunt lost everything. My family and I lost everything. We also lost a great aunt and uncle in the Lower Ninth Ward. And so we lost both our loved ones and our property.
And so obviously the point of view that you're expressing is a very, very, very personal one. What do you say, though, to the folks? I mean, the two big arguments that you hear is New Orleans needs these tourist dollars to desperately needs these tourist dollars to kickstart the economy and get the rebuilding in gear.
Well, number one, we need our residents back more than we need the tax dollars. The tourist dollars. The tourist dollars are fleeting. If we bring our residents back, then we can build a tax base. People could be put back to work. We need jobs more than we need tourists. We need help. And I think stressing a carnival season, what we don't understand is that the city is paying for this. In my neighborhood, for example, I live in at the cusp of Gentilly and New Orleans East. I live in a community known as Kenilworth.
Mm-hmm.
And I have not seen a police patrol the area one time. And I've been back, all told, at least five different occasions, spending no less than 1 week in that community cleaning up. In my parents' community, a neighboring community, the historic Pontchartrain Park,
mm-hmm.
not one police have I seen patrolling those communities. We're talking about communities of maybe 1,000 people.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think it's more important to protect and to patrol the communities, protect them from vandals, and gangsters than it is to have our police working overtime patrolling the communities hosting carnival parades.
Mm. Mr. Robertson, I'd be really interested to hear what your neighborhood looks like because, again, you know, when I was down there, I was struck by this fact that there's almost no way to describe the kind of devastation, but it can help. I mean, I'm just...
Yes, I think combat veterans would have a greater understanding of the type of carnage that exists in these once beautiful and vibrant communities.
Oh.
You know, the first thing that you experience is the smell. You know, it's the... Oh, and this is now 6 months after the flood had receded. you know, we're talking about the ominous odor of mildew, mold, and decay. That's number one. Number two, what strikes you is the blocks and blocks and blocks and blocks of empty and abandoned properties.
Mm. Literally from one end of the city to the other.
Literally from at least the 7th Ward all the way to the St. Tammany Parish line. We're talking about nothing less than 7 whole zip codes. And so just the sheer abandonment and carnage are the two things that impact me the most. In my community, people are coming back. It's a middle-class community which was comprised of primarily African Americans, professionals, college graduates. It was anchored by a small mall, an elementary school, and a playground, all of which are now abandoned. And it's painful to experience it.
Okay. I want to bring Nick Spitzer back in the conversation. We lost him briefly because of problems with the phone line. Nick Spitzer, I think you've been listening to Clyde
yes.
Robertson. I'd love you just to chime in. I don't want to sort of set up an argument here because you're both native New Orleanians. But, you know, speak to Mr. Robertson's issue.
Well, first of all, I have, you know, sympathy and great respect for his point of view, and I it's just terrible to hear about the losses of family members and friends and the neighborhoods, and I love that area over by Gentilly into New Orleans East. He's right, it's a beautiful area, and it's an historic African-American, Afro-Creole area of highly educated folks, and some of them have been among the most articulate and active about the questions of not just Carnival, but how the city rebuilds, and there's a focus now on the regional neighborhood redevelopment authorities. They're looking especially at a locus around Gentilly. And I sympathize with what he says, and I have friends that lost a great deal as well. But I think it really is just a question to some degree of means here, which is partly, for example, when Madison Square Garden held the big event back in September, 2 weeks out when it was really raw, many New Orleans bands were there playing Mardi Gras music and celebrating, and they were doing it as a fundraiser. And in a sense, I think Carnival is going to be a fundraiser if you look at the larger amount of money that will come back into the economy. I grant you that police protection should be everywhere in the city, and those neighborhoods have had particular problems because there's fewer in them right now, and I think the police have said, we won't, spend as much time there. But he's right. Looting and lawlessness have been a real problem in these large, dark, quiet areas. But I think that's part of the issue is that the city is so, there isn't a song raised, there isn't a sense of partying out there because there just aren't people. I think Mardi Gras will get people back here. I've heard of numbers of groups bringing cars and buses in for the long weekend, kind of as a test point to see how they feel about all this. And I think it's a sort of a psychological stepping stone to get those very taxpayers back into the city, even if it is for this Carnival moment. So. I go back to the notion of personal choice versus public policy. Certainly, with what he's got to deal with, he can't be out at Carnival.
Right.
But on the other hand, there's public policy, and I think you can make a case for letting the city have a muted celebration.
Sure. Mr. Robertson, speaking of what you have to deal with, I'd like to sort of shift the subject just a tiny bit, and that is talk to you a little bit about the challenge of rebuilding your home and just what you're facing. And again, this is something that is very hard to express to somebody who hasn't been down there and see what is involved. But I was struck down there by people that were beginning to gut their homes and rebuild them, especially in neighborhoods like the Lower Ninth. And, gutting your home was almost a political statement that said, we are staying, we are rebuilding, we are not going to let our homes be razed and we're here. Can you talk? Yeah, go ahead.
What the nation has to understand is that there's a concerted effort so it seems, to close down, if you will, large tracts of property, large tracts of communities from Gentilly through the St. Tammany Parish line.
Mm-hmm.
Again, I refer to the 70122 through 70129 zip code areas in the past. To determine that returning and rebuilding as a priority is a political statement because it's being done in the face of national think tanks, which are encouraging the mayor and the city's leaders to completely close down these areas, my community being one.
Hmm.
You're absolutely correct. I had to gut my home all the way to its beams and floor. There's nothing remaining in my home. Now, contrary to public opinion, not every home in the city is made of wood. You know, my community is a community which houses brick structures. And so our foundations and our structures are secure. For example, I did not sustain any structural damage.
Mm-hmm.
However, my floodwaters, the floodwaters ravaged my home and hovered at around 5 feet, it seems, for weeks,
mm-hmm.
destroying everything inside.
Mm-hmm.
The problem was, in my community, that our pump, I live near a pumping station, a several-story high pumping station that either never worked or was never turned on.
I see. So that means the your house essentially sat in the water for up to 3 weeks. And,
my home
obviously
sat in the water for as long as 3 weeks.
Right.
Yes.
Let's go to Duncombe, calling from Davenport, Iowa. Hello, Duncombe.
Yes, thank you.
Thank you for the call.
You're welcome.
What's on your mind?
Well, I was there for 3 months living in Camp Algiers in a tent. And your conversation, whether they should have Mardi Gras or not, was almost talked about daily,
mm-hmm.
as well as whether they should rebuild, etc. The majority of the people that I were around, and some of them had lost their homes, was that they did need, or New Orleans does need, Mardi Gras, if for no other reason other than to get people there so that they can see the devastation. Since I've been back in Iowa, there just isn't any way anyone here can fully comprehend, even though programs like yours and on television, there just isn't any way that they can comprehend the devastation, not only to the property, but to the people. And I'm one of those that say, get them there so that they can see the devastation. And it is so widespread.
Yep.
That it's just unbelievable. And it's not just in New Orleans. Slidell, go both directions. It's just as devastating. They didn't have the flood, but
right.
They need people there so that they can see that.
Duncombe, thanks for the call. I appreciate it. Let me throw that idea over to Nick Spitzer. Nick, I wanted to sort of get your take on that as well. Clyde Robertson spoke fairly eloquently about the extent of the devastation. Talk
no,
a little
I completely
bit.
Agree. I think that there's no substitute for being here, and that's why we've had these crusades up to Washington, Women of the Storm, trying to invite all these congressmen down. And you know, what happens is that when you have a photograph, a radio program, a television show, you see a vignette, you see a framed something.
Mm-hmm.
But when you get out and actually ride, walk across damage from Lakeview over across through Gentilly and into New Orleans East and down to the lower Ninth Ward, I mean, it just goes on for mile after mile after mile. And then you could go down into St. Bernard or over to Slidell or the Mississippi coast. And it's the scope of damage and the eeriness of the fact that, as Mr. Robinson said, it's got a brick house. Well, those houses were largely unmoved by the floodwaters, but they sat there marinating in that toxic soup for all that time. And so it's a ghostly, quiet landscape with mold, and, you know, every block or two someone's got sheetrock out, and it just repeats, and it's stupefying
mm-hmm.
how vast it is. You know that it's 100 blocks in all directions around you as you go. It's so phenomenal. But only can the human senses apprehend that up close. That's why the media just can't quite get this story out, I think.
I agree with that. Clyde Robertson, please.
Yes, there's one major flaw in that formula.
Mm.
Carnival does not impact the entire city.
Mm-hmm.
Parades are sequestered in certain areas of the city. When people normally come to the city of New Orleans for Carnival, they rarely, unless they're staying in a New Orleans East hotel, venture towards that direction. They are pretty much sequestered in the uptown French Quarter, maybe Algiers if they're going to Nam Tak or some of the other parades that are housed in that community. I submit to you that most of the people who are coming to Carnival will not venture into those areas where the damage is so widespread. In addition to that, the damage is not going anywhere. People can come and visit New Orleans from now until 3 years from now, and they will still see and experience much of the carnage caused by both the government and Katrina.
Mm-hmm.
Now, we need, more than a carnival, we need our jobs and our businesses to return. We need our citizens to return day in and day out, mm-hmm. both on the local and national media scopes. You will find employers begging their prior employees, their past employees, to return.
Mm-hmm. With a question to you, and I want to I was doing some reading about some of the stuff that you've written about Katrina, and you wrote, this is a natural and a cultural disaster. I think we've done a lot of talking this hour about the ravages of the natural disaster. What do you mean about the cultural disaster?
Well, I mean, the loss of all these people from the neighborhoods has meant that the city is not in its classic balance of it's an African-American, Afro-Creole majority city. It's always had a creative tension between European, Caribbean, African roots, and it's the very tension that produced jazz and continued to make some great music here. It's always been a shitty city where people share things across lines of race and class, uptown, downtown, food, and, of course, carnival and music. And so without the large majority of people here, you lose that sense, and it's a kind of a strange ghost town, and it is a more of an uptown white town now. So the creative sort of cultural landscape isn't there, and brass bands come out of these neighborhoods. You know, the cooks and folks come out of these neighborhoods, and the soul of the city in many ways is, gone right now.
Nick, are you do you have any reason to be optimistic that that soul can be restored, that will be restored? But I mean, as you drive around that city from one end to the other, and we've talked about the scope of that devastation, it's hard to imagine how and when so many of these people will come back.
Well, you try to be optimistic, and I'm back here with my program. I was out for 4 months broadcasting from Lafayette, 140 miles west, and my university's back up and running, and Tulane is running, and a lot of things are happening. I think if you talk to anyone here, and within a minute or two, the conversation turns to the difficulties and problems we're all facing, and, people start crying in odd times and moments, and, the emotion is always near the surface, and I think people do go in fits of depression. I mean, we are dealing with a vast, vast problem here, but I think we have little alternative but to work as hard as we can, to work together, to help each other, and to try to make things go. And I think we have a chance to make a better New Orleans that's more integrated, more progressive, and maybe puts aside some of its older institutional ways and post-colonial ways and emerges as something that we all would like it, many of us would like it to be. So there's a funny mixture of great hope and optimism and then a daily sadness that you just deal with people's problems all the time. And so it's confusing for people.
Yep.
It's very emotional, and yet the rational has to prevail as much of the time as we can to propel forward with the emotions.
Well, speaking of the rational, or maybe the irrational, I'd like to bring in another voice into this conversation. Joining us from New Orleans is Jody Borello. Jody was raised in New Orleans. She's a comedian. She performs in New Orleans and has been taking her act on the road. And Jody, nice to have you with us.
Thank you for having me, Anthony.
Sure.
How you doing?
Good. It was nice meeting you last November.
Absolutely.
And I wanted to talk to you a little bit about, we've been talking about Mardi Gras, and I think rather than sort of re-engage the debate about whether it should or shouldn't be, I was struck by your act last November because you were at a sort of uptown pep rally, and you were making jokes about Hurricane Katrina, and people were laughing, and they seemed like they needed to laugh.
Right. I absolutely feel that people need to laugh. But, and the jokes that I do make are as a direct result of what's happened to me as a result of the hurricane and the disaster. So that's where my humor tends to come from, is more from a personal aspect, because I would never go into detail about the tragedy and the loss of so many.
Of course.
But, and even right now I'm hearing you talk about Mardi Gras, and it's a lot of things are really coming up right now about Mardi Gras season.
Such as? I'd like to sort of hear your take. I mean, what are you feeling in this season as a native New Orleanian?
I think it's a much-needed distraction. Mm-hmm. You know, and a lot of people say, like, even right now, you know, I said, yeah, that's great. That's all the city needs is 1 million pounds more trash. that's just fantastic. Bring it on. But, you know, we've always made Mardi Gras, especially for locals and natives of New Orleans, is it's definitely a family-oriented, you know, celebration. So, you know, for the kids that I'm bringing, my daughter and my nieces and my nephews, and we're going out to the parade, I mean, first of all, we get a parking spot in 22 seconds, which is unheard of.
There's some good news.
You know?
Yeah.
So that's great. But, I mean, while we're looking at the floats, it's just, it's such an immediate reflection of what we need going on in the city. And we forget, you know, and I think it's great just to forget for a little while. And the only time you really remember is when a cup goes flying past you and you're telling the kids, okay, don't go dig in that pile of rubble for a cup. Let's just come right back to the front.
Okay, Jody, stand by. We've got a lot of callers standing by, and I've been slow to get to them. Let's talk to Carol, who's calling from Bridgewater, Massachusetts. Hi, Carol.
Hi.
Thanks for the call. What's on your mind?
I have family down there. I was raised there.
Mm-hmm.
And the people, since the storm, the thing that's concerned me most is their psychological aspect of the results of all this tragedy.
Mm-hmm.
And I have aunts and uncles who are in their 80s, and they actually stayed in the city when everyone else left because it was impossible for this to happen. And after 3 days in the city, they evacuated to Texas and then came for 3 weeks. They were bounced around for over 6 weeks.
Right.
And finally, my aunt's house got electricity, and she was able to get back into it, but she didn't have gas for hot water or cooking. But she refused to leave her house because she was home and she wasn't going to leave it again. And now she adores Mardi Gras. And I think that the people in that generation have, they're saying, we'll never see New Orleans again.
Mm-hmm.
New Orleans they knew. And I think she loves Mardi Gras. They all love Mardi Gras. And I think this is just a really big lift to them to be able to go out and do this after everything they've all been through.
Sure.
It's not the same Mardi Gras they knew, but it's Mardi Gras, and it's festive, and it's good times rolling.
Right.
So,
Carol, thanks so much for the call. I appreciate it. Let me throw that thought embedded in there over to Nick Spitzer. Nick, you know, Carol talked about almost a state of exhaustion that people are feeling, and I picked up on that 3 months ago, and you really feel it. There's almost a kind of battlefield fatigue on the streets among people. I would think that, as Carol said, that Mardi Gras is important for that reason.
Well, I think what everybody's been saying, that first of all, it is very much a family event, you know, and a lot of these little kids feel very displaced, and the chance to go out, in a sense, put something back on schedule, which means catching your fluffy toys from the floats, is something that the little kids look forward to. And so there is that therapeutic aspect. I also just think, you know, Northern Europe has difficulty reconciling itself to the Southern European, West African approaches to pleasure. And I think this, you know, New Orleans has nothing to be ashamed of. It's beloved by the world precisely because it's pursued joy and pleasure and happiness, and sometimes to excess and sometimes to the exclusion of a good economy and many other important things we desperately need. But nonetheless, the world loves New Orleans for this and its uniqueness in America. And I think it's a statement back to the New Orleanians, who can use humor and joy and pleasure to feel better and take another step. And it's a statement to the world. And I have to also say, thinking back to what Mr. Robinson was saying, I mean, the great black Mardi Gras parade, Zulu, had some internal debate and has decided to parade. And, you know, they held a jazz funeral for those who were affected. The jazz funeral itself embraces the emotion of mourning and loss, and then the transition to celebratory for hope for a better life for the deceased in the heaven, as well as for those that survive on earth. So embedded in this culture is that ability to mourn and then to celebrate. And I think that's what's going to happen.
Let's take a call from Nancy from Aiken, South Carolina. Hi, Nancy.
Hi, how are you?
Good. What are you thinking?
Well, I guess I'm going to have to throw the colonial Northern European cold water on all of this.
Uh-oh.
Because as an American taxpayer who is being asked to foot what looks to be a fairly large bill, I think the rest of America is looking for a change in attitude on the part of particularly political New Orleans, but everybody else there as well. And just an admission that laissez les bon temps rouler, let the good times roll, is no longer applicable there. Mm. I mean, that was the attitude that got that city into trouble in the first place.
Well, wait a minute. Wait a minute. I mean, I need to challenge you there. You think that the attitude that allows Mardi Gras to happen is why the levees broke?
No, I think that this whole thing about celebration above all else, which seems still to be the attitude of the political class there. You know, I mean, this city neglected its citizens. It neglected to look at the vulnerability of its citizens. It neglected the care of the levees. Don't you think that for 1 year at least we could have a bit of a change of attitude there?
Okay, Nancy, I appreciate the call, and you're a brave woman to bring up these points in this contact. But let me get Jody and Nick to sort of chime in here. Jody, what do you make of Nancy for making South Carolina's point?
You know, I can understand to a certain extent about, you know, her bringing up the politics, Nancy. I really can. But when you say Le Bon Temps Roulette, you know, right now for us in New Orleans, and I'm sure Nick can see it, and Anthony, you saw it, it is truly a daily survival mode.
Mm-hmm.
That I don't think a lot of people who have not been here and who aren't appreciating the mere fact we are literally picking up the pieces of our lives. And when I say from a standpoint of, you know, Mardi Gras, to give my kids and my family some normalcy, please, please. They've lost, you know, everything that was familiar to them.
Mm-hmm.
And if I can bring one thing familiar in their life in the last 6 months, let us do it.
Mm.
And if we can afford for the firemen in the city and for it to be safe for us to do it, why not?
Mm. But, Nick, I mean, whether this means that Mardi Gras should have been canceled or not, I'm not sure that's the question. But the caller makes a good point, doesn't she, that things, sort of business as usual in New Orleans isn't going to cut it for the future.
Let's be clear about it. All the beautiful things that New Orleans brought to the world, the great food, the great architecture, the great music, the carnival, none of this was a progressive plan. I mean, this was the result of people responding to huge difficulty, enslavement, indentured servitude, and difficult environs, cut off from the rest of the United States by water, the northern tip of the Caribbean. And yet within that world, cultural creativity has carried the day. It is still a bit of a stereotype to assume that all of life is bon vivant, laissez le bon temps rouler. Certainly a lot of tourists come for that. And to some degree, our politicians and others sell that. But this is a very hard-working society.
Mm-hmm.
This is where people pump oil. This is where people run the ships. This is where people really do tremendous building arts and crafts to make this beautiful landscape. And so there are a lot of very hard-working people here. Is it at the level of progressive social order of other parts of the U.S.? It hasn't been for a variety of reasons that have isolated it. But that's not the people's fault here. And I think it's very important to realize that maybe a little of the joy of art in public places as part of the cultural landscape could make the rest of America a little happier. And at the same time, we could use some great public schools, better environmental planning, and God knows, better governance.
Mm-hmm.
That's our dirty laundry.
Sure.
That's for real. But as she says, people are hurting now. And it's not a time to be pointing fingers about that. The carnival's going to help these people.
Right. Felicia is calling from Cambridge, Massachusetts. Hi, Felicia.
Hi, how are you?
Thank you. Thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
I'm from Baton Rouge. So I was home over Christmas.
Yeah.
So a couple of points. First of all, I couldn't disagree more with your caller, Nancy. She probably has never even been down to New Orleans.
Mm.
But you're speaking about the rebuilding, and I was there the day after Christmas and went into the heaviest hit areas, and I was absolutely floored by the fact nothing's been done in those areas.
Mm.
No debris has been cleared. There's no dump trucks anywhere. It looked exactly the same as it did right after the storm, after the water. I couldn't believe it.
Mm. Mm.
Yeah. And, I mean, the federal government sitting back and not doing nothing in response to Nancy, the federal government is responsible for the levees, not the state of Louisiana or the city of New Orleans.
Right. So the idea of a celebration now, you said you're from that part of the world, not New Orleans, but Baton Rouge. I mean, you feel like it's an important thing to be doing right now?
Absolutely.
Sure.
I think that any distraction for a little while for these people and what they've been through, just to lift their spirits even temporarily, I think they should definitely be celebrating Mardi Gras.
Mm. Thanks for the call, Felicia. Appreciate it very much. Nick and Jody, chime in on that last point made by Felicia, and that is this idea that so little has been done. I'd offer another point of view. I don't think that so little has been done. I just think, as we've mentioned, the level of the devastation is so huge that even if much has been done, it's hard to notice it. Is that fair?
I think that's fair. I mean, obviously, we'd like to see more happen faster. We all would. The reality is that those areas that were really badly hit, Lakeview across the Gentilly down to the lower ninth and right. out into New Orleans East, I mean, you're dealing with a scale that's so huge. And I think the tendency has been where there are people on the higher ground who are back with hammers ringing and getting rid of mold, the energy has tended to go where the people are in this yep. currently shrunk footprint. But that, you know, let's also face another fact that prior to the catastrophe, that many, many areas of New Orleans lived in dire poverty and much of the city was in terrible decay.
Mm.
So to expect these places overnight to somehow yep. be renovated, you know, is really problematic. That said, maybe in this right of return that I think most people are hoping for, maybe some areas in higher ground that had houses that were in decay, maybe those are some of the ones we can focus on and
yep.
help get people from neighborhoods that will be harder to recover.
Nick, our time is
hoods.
Nick, I appreciate it. Our time is almost at an end, and I want to give Jody Borello
sure.
the sort of the last 10 seconds to lift our spirits on what should be a happy time, but of course from a city that still is facing a lot of hard times.
I just want to just thank you for having me, but so many of us are not home. And that's the sad part. The reality is that we're going to bring this city back, just as you all had said, better than ever for everybody to come home.
Thanks a lot. Jody Borello, a New Orleans comedian. She spoke to us from New Orleans. And Nick Spitzer joined us from New Orleans as well. He's host of the public radio music and cultural program American Roots from New Orleans and professor of folklore at the University of New Orleans. Nick Spitzer, thank you so much.
Thanks for having
and
me.
And good luck to you. You can continue the conversation, download the On Point podcast, and subscribe to our daily newsletter, all at our website, onpointradio.org. Senior producer of On Point is Joe O'Connor. I'm Anthony Brooks. This is On Point.